Welcome to All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm your host, William O'Flaherty, the author of an enhanced study guide to the Screwtape Letters, and I've also written a book called The Misquotable C.S. Lewis. It warns of things Lewis didn't say, but some falsely claim he did. I'll tell you more about those books at the end of today's show. Today, though, I have a returning guest, Zach Kincaid, who has been on the show most recently just last year in 2017. I spoke with him about a collection of readings from C.S. Lewis called Preparing for Easter. He's back today to discuss not one but two new collections of readings built around different themes. Welcome back to All About Jack, Zach.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let me first state the names of the two titles that we're focusing upon. They are, first, How to Be a Christian, and the second is called How to Pray. Now, previously, I had you initially address a question that I will pitch to start out again today, that why would the publisher have you pick out from the writings of C.S. Lewis that is already published? Meaning, why come out with books based on a certain theme?
Well, there's a few reasons for that, and it was not my impetus, but this is sort of becoming a habit, and the reason for it is it creates a reference point for those who want to look at Lewis for specific reasons, for specific emphases. We can see that in Martindale and Root's Quotable Lewis, for example, where it indexes various quotes around themes. So it's not a new thing to have this sort of reference. It does provide a reintroduction, though, of Lewis that gets out of sort of the two or three or even only the one book that people are familiar with Lewis on, and exposes them to more of Lewis's writings in a shorter quip. So it becomes somewhat of a primer as well. So I think it's both. It's a reference point. So if you want most of what Lewis says about prayer, for example, we've collected that in this book. It's not meaning to be exhaustive to a T, but it does give you a good reference point. And like I said, the other part of that is a primer for folks to say, oh, well, I didn't realize Lewis addressed this or had that book. Especially given the fact that HarperCollins has, or HarperOne, reintroduced a number of titles even this past year on their press specifically.
Right, and I want to emphasize one of the things that you're noting in terms of people not being familiar with Lewis beyond a certain number of books. Back when I started reading Lewis in the 80s, the book, The Business of Heaven, that Walter Hooper edited, that introduced me to a wide range of nonfictional writings, whether it be either books or collections of essays that were previously published as standalone essays that were interesting in and of themselves, then collected in different types of books that it exposed me to that. And so while some may say, oh, that's just previously published material, why not try to track down new stuff? And there's not really any new things that we know of outside of maybe some letters that weren't included in the collected letters. And so I think this is a great way, as well as what you're noting in terms of Lewis on certain themes, focusing on the different things he said across his writings, as well as just exposing people to the fact that there are many other writings besides maybe a half dozen favored that people may be familiar with, in addition to his, of course, fictional series, The Chronicles of Narnia. Well, now, let's go ahead and explore each title separately and begin with How to Be a Christian. That is actually the longer of the two books. If I looked at my stats correctly, it was like 256 pages it was rated at, and the other one is 176. So this is quite a bit of material in each. But if I can play the role of the devil's advocate, I might say that, you know, a person just needs to accept Jesus into their heart. You know, that's how to become a Christian. But that's just not what this book addresses. So please give us an overview of what How to Be a Christian does.
So as you know, the author, and in this case, being the editor, there's not a final say in the book's title. It's the publisher that does that. And so my working title was actually Instructions on Christian Living. And that's really what it is. I mean, How to Be a Christian is a fine title as well. It's, as you said in your question, it might be a little bit misleading because it's not a scripted sort of set of selections from Lewis on how to be a Christian in the sense of gaining one's salvation, but rather what it means to live out the faith. So there was a purposed effort to steer around like a heavy theological emphasis and go to more of a practical guide to various ways in which we should behave as Christians and various instruction points that Lewis provides on that point. There's less material there than Lewis on the doctrinal points of the heady points, as one might say, of the Christian faith. But there's certainly points that we've drawn out in this book to help as instructive points on Christian living.
Well, now, as I did when we examined or talked about the Easter selections, that was to have you read some selections. Let's have you go ahead and share maybe an excerpt from a few readings from the book again that's titled How to Be a Christian.
Right. So some of the selections that I like are just kind of built around the structure of the book. And that's sort of an unseen structure, but one that the reason for the flow and, starting with on working out your salvation and then ending with this great interview is similar to the one that we're having that is recorded in God in the Dock is, I think, an instruction, just a very practical way to structure the book. And in between those bookends, you have variety of things on forgiveness, on what it means to live the Christian life in a way that is both distinguished as well as grace filled to one's neighbor. So yes, I have pulled out a few points here. On page 45, this is from The Weight of Glory on forgiveness. We say a great many things in church and out of church too without thinking of what we are saying. For instance, we say in the creed, I believe in the forgiveness of sins. I had been saying it for several years before I asked myself why it was in the creed. At first sight, it seems hardly worth putting in. If one is a Christian, I thought, of course one believes in the forgiveness of sins. It goes without saying. But the people who compiled the creed apparently thought that this was a part of our belief which needed to be reminded of every time when we went to church. And I have begun to see that, as far as I am concerned, they were right. To believe in the forgiveness of sins is not nearly so easy as I thought. Real belief in it is the sort of thing that very easily slips away if we don't keep on polishing it up. So it's those sorts of excerpts, and that represents it, to a point, those sorts of excerpts that kind of, okay, well, this is what we say we believe. How do we do that on the street? And we don't often come to Lewis and ask that kind of question. Lewis is more known for that sort of, okay, well, he doesn't call himself a theologian. He doesn't like that kind of terminology, as we know from what he said, because he's not like a don of that. But nonetheless, evangelicals especially go to Lewis and say, well, what does he say on a theological point? They probably don't go to Lewis and say, well, what does Lewis say on X, Y, and Z because I'm having a problem in my life? I should say too that this began as a longer project than what is presented in the book. And there was a section that was titled On Practical Matters. And he's got, some things to talk about in terms of marriage and baptism and balancing a job and eating is serious too, from the Four Loves, a little excerpt. Those kind of were taken out to shorten the book and make it more concise. But there are even more practical things that Lewis addresses on seemingly random subjects, but nonetheless, it sort of rounds out Lewis for us.
Oh, very interesting. It would be interesting if, especially if the publisher decided to do a sequel, How to Be More of a Christian. No, just kidding. But well, Lewis did write quite a bit on things, so it's sometimes hard to just narrow it down. And they had to make a decision in terms of focus. And as you said, your suggested title or your working title was different in terms of what it's actually approaching. But what it ended up may not be the clearest, but it gets the people to maybe pick it up, to look at it, to see that he's talking about, you know, applying the Christian life and walking it.
And to skip ahead, I know we're going to talk about some of the other work that I've been doing, especially the long-term work on cslewis.com on the blog. That's where some of this stuff will probably end up. A title that you can expect to see in the future is Lewis on Balancing a Job, or Lewis on What Gardens Tell Us, which seems like, or The Danger of a Joke, which comes from the Screwtape Letters, mm-hmm. On Old Friendships, which is a pull from a letter to Mrs. Arnold in 1952. And so that kind of practical advice, I think is helpful, even though it might be the minor tone to the major of what Lewis is usually about.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. Well, now, the other book is, again, called How to Pray. What would you give as a summary for this title?
Well, I should start that in a brief letter in August 1949, Lewis says to a friend, "I don't feel like I could write a book on prayer. I think it would rather be cheek of my part." But by 1953, as you might know, an idea of the Book of Prayer was crystallizing, and he writes to Father Calabria, "I'm trying to write a book about private prayers for the use of the laity, especially for those who have been recently converted to the Christian faith." And we know that that book is Letters to Malcolm, chiefly on prayer. So, but what he wrote to Calabria, the content was far from completion, and Lewis admitted to wrestling with whether it was even something he should write. So finally, in 1964, as we know, after his death, the Letters of Malcolm, or Letters to Malcolm, was published. And it does provide a helpful insight on how to pray. So the question is, well, what is this? Not in comparison, but, you know, Letters to Malcolm's already there as a guide to prayer from Lewis. So why this book? This book does take into account the book that was just published, How to Pray. Does have some of Letters to Malcolm in it, some excerpts, but I actually tried to steer clear from that as much as I could, to sort of embrace the other points of Lewis's call to prayer from his other works, to again kind of round out what he says, knowing that Letters to Malcolm was already there. So anyway, that should be acknowledged in kind of what I said in terms of his sort of thinking about and wanting to provide this a book on this very important issue in kind of a different sort of way. As we know, Letters to Malcolm was a fictitious group of letters, and so he was trying to present prayer in a creative device or setting. So I hope that helps answer, you know, why this. We don't really have a collection of Lewis could have very easily gone back through, or an editor back when Lewis was alive, to track through what he was saying about prayer. But so this is an attempt to do that, because that wasn't done.
Right, and that's good to point out in terms of how you approached it, or what you did and didn't include, in terms of, since he did that Letters to Malcolm which was written to an individual that doesn't exist. So it's nice. I guess it brings up the point that Lewis's writings is sometimes hard to pin down. Is this a fictional work or is this a non-fictional work? Well, Letters to Malcolm is non-fiction in the traditional sense of that word, but then it wasn't written to a actual individual, which is sometimes hard for people to understand since we now have the collected letters of Lewis, and so it's assumed, well, that was to Malcolm. but yes, since he does talk about prayer, although he does it in a conversational type way, we only have his side of the letters. He didn't try to create Malcolm's side, but that is there for people to see, and then you try to not include much from that. So that's good to know that collects all his other thoughts, especially, and such. So that's good. Well, let's go ahead and, as we did before, have you give us some samples of what is included in How to Pray.
Sure. And as I did with the other, kind of the way in which this is structured is kind of beginning with understanding prayer and ending with, you know, praying in the reality of our world. So there's a flow and a structure to it that, you know, is a little bit, you know, not forced, but you don't have to necessarily realize the structure to enjoy the selections. But just know that in the background, there's a reason or some of a reason why these things are flowing one from another. We have a whole section, for example, of what the devil thinks and excerpts from Screwtape Letters, obviously. This is actually Letters to Malcolm, the one that I just pulled up on page 33 of the book. I presume that only God's attention keeps me or anything else in existence. What then are we really doing? Our whole conception of, so to call it, the prayer situation depends on the answer. We are always completely and therefore equally known to God. That is our destiny, whether we like it or not. But though this knowledge never varies, the quality of our being known can. A school of thought holds that freedom is willed necessity. And he goes on, trying to understand for himself, and I think for the reader, the necessity of prayer in the reality of God knowing everything. Mm-hmm. You know, a note made by Wormwood later on that we pull out on page 66. It is no doubt impossible to prevent his prayer for his mother, but we have means of rendering the prayer innocuous. Make sure that they are always very spiritual, that he is always concerned with the state of her soul and never with her rheumatism. Two advantages will follow. In the first place, his attention will be kept on what he regards as her sins, but by which, with a little guidance from you, he can be induced to mean any of her actions which are inconvenient or irritating to himself. So he never gets to the prayer. Rather, he's absorbed with sort of this overarching a point of view and not specifically to the prayer that he wants to pray at hand. So those sorts of, a very practical kind of guide that's intermixed with certainly some theological points as well. So I think that people will find this very helpful. There are several letters that are involved in what we've put together, or what I've put together. Letters to an American Lady, we pulled one out that I think is quite helpful. Page 92, we all go through periods of dryness in our prayers, don't we? I doubt, but ask your director, whether they are necessarily a bad symptom. I sometimes suspect that what we feel to be our best prayers are really our worst, that what we are enjoying is the satisfaction of apparent success, as in executing a dance or reciting a poem. Do our prayers sometimes go wrong because we insist on trying to talk to God when he wants to talk to us? So again, the dance between the theological and also the practical is I think one reason why this how-to, as it's titled, really does fit, because it's both this practical and this theological point. My working title was on living a life of prayer, but the how-to and then the how to be a Christian, it is kind of a self-help Lewis style, and that creates a lot more depth than your traditional self-help book or Christian self-help book. And so I think it will have a prominent place for those who want to be more thoughtful, perhaps, about thinking of these issues.
And I might just add, you know, a lot of times people will kind of cringe in some circles, oh, self-help, we want, you know, Christ-centered help. Well, this is an individual sharing what they have found helpful. And it's like, this is something that you might find helpful as well. Of course, there's self-help that gets really very selfish and things of that nature, but some people have a knee-jerk reaction to that. So I always kind of clarify that. But yeah, that's some good insight. Now, you've touched on the following here, but maybe you might have a few more words to say, and that is the process of coming up for your selections. What was that like? And, you know, how did you ultimately decide what to include versus what not to include? Now, you already noted that the editor, of course, or the publisher has the final say. As the editor, you pitched what you did, but tell us maybe some more about that.
Well, my process, and, you know, people have various ways they do this, but, you know, there's a pretty large canon of Lewis material, and having dipped in it for the preparing for Easter and now for these two books, and there's some other things floating around out there as well, coming up with somewhat of a structure. So if you take prayer, for example, what do other books say about prayer? What are the headings and subheadings of what that would mean for an individual? How it would be helpful for somebody? And so those are a bit of a, you know, false flags, but it does then help in going to Lewis for, you know, whether it's the problem of pain or grief observed, both real strong as they come into what it means to have a prayerful life, or the letters, I mean, or any of the other things that you're going to read about Lewis. You're looking for, okay, well, how does this then get into one of these four or five buckets and begin to weave together a strong hook, if you want to put it in those terms, I guess I can, a strong hook for folks to then be invited in and want to read this. So they're not just kind of hanging out there as, okay, well, here's a bunch of stuff on prayer, but, you know, here's, you know, a bit more flow. And not to, at all to correct what the finished product looks like. However, I would have enjoyed personally as a reader to have some of those hooks, those flows as I've came up with them to how this would work. I mean, some of those should maybe have been part of the finished product, so people could look at and see, well, you know, that's why that's there. But it works the way they have it as well. So, and you've got to kind of safeguard, you know, Lewis didn't put this together, and you're wanting Lewis to speak as Lewis would inside that excerpt and not have it hanging too much on, you know, what I would come up with or what someone else would come up with. So I don't know if that.
No, that's helpful. Good. Yeah. One of the things that kind of makes me think of in terms of, you know, isolated quotes would, of course, you know, I specialize in terms of identifying quotes that people falsely attributed to Lewis. And so these books here help provide a greater context in terms of what he has said on the subject. But then you seem to be suggesting it is always challenging as to where to end something, to where you've shared enough of what he's saying about that point to where it stands alone without needing the rest of the material. But of course, it's referenced so people can go ahead and then read the entire context or setting for what he was saying.
Yeah, that's better said than I said it. I think that that's certainly true as well. So that there's a, as you said, there's a context for, and that's why you won't find much of his or any of the fiction that material in here, except for Letters to Malcolm, as you said, fiction, nonfiction kind of crosses there, because there is, you've got to build the context around it. Certainly, there are. Lewis provides to Ransom various things that he says in the Space Trilogy that could be apropos to how to live Christianly, or even maybe how to pray, although I didn't specifically look at that. But you have to then round out that in such a way that even when we present the Screwtape Letters, there's a bit of an editor's note to say, well, this is why this is looking at the other side of things, because those that are maybe not familiar with the Screwtape Letters will read it and say, well, that's not right. Well, it's not right. It's from a devil. So you don't want to do that at every turn. You know, so some things get nixed just for the sake of that, if for nothing more. I'm thinking of a specific case. I was just reading That Hideous Strength, and there is a moment where they're talking about the incarnation, and I just put together a proposal about reading Lewis through Advent and Christmastide, and that would be a great quote, but you can't, again, you can't pull that in an effective way if no one, if the majority of your readers haven't read that. So there's, you know, a strong balance, a strong dance, because so many people haven't read Lewis exhaustively, and you can't call out things that, you know, they don't have the reference point for.
That's a great point, because that's reminding me, as I share on my website, EssentialCSLewis.com, I do share a quote of the day. And these are selections I picked several years ago, back around 2012, 2013. I may have revised it some. And I took somewhat of an approach in terms of, okay, this quote is meaningful to me. And as I'm looking at some of them, you know, specializing in, you know, misquotes or false attributions, also I flag things that isolated from the context is maybe difficult. And whereas when you're speaking about Lewis and you're sharing a quote, you can elaborate. That quote stand alone may not be as meaningful to some people. I'm thinking of something recently I posted that maybe next year I may decide, well, there's not enough context to it because it is from his fictional work and it could be interpreted too many different ways. But someone who has read that work, it would be a great reminder. So that balancing act is at times challenging. But in terms of challenging, we need to face the challenge of it's coming towards a close with this interview and touching on a few more topics. And next, I wanted to go back to briefly have you share about that the other book that we've referenced, and that is Preparing for Easter. Can you share just a summary overview of that? And I'll have a link in the show notes so people can hear the entire interview.
Yeah, to me, I really enjoyed putting that book together. I should say, or I could say, much more than these other two, just because it's so much the heart of the Christian life, this rhythmic pattern of the Christian calendar. And that's really why I've now put together this Advent and Christmastide proposal for that's in the same model as Preparing for Easter. It's the daily reading, scripture selections, psalm selections. And that's what you'll find in Preparing for Easter, where as you go through this old established way in which we approach Easter through the Lenten season. And Lewis is a great resource for that, because the resurrection and likewise the incarnation, that is at the heart of everything he writes and everything he's about. As we all would say in this, likened to what Paul says, you know, without the resurrection, we are we are shameful and should be laughed at. And so preparing ourselves to meet that episode every year as we come to Easter, I think is rather important. And they're short devotional readings and devotional selections from Scripture, and could be worked in as a companion to something else that you have long loved as you walk toward Easter, or be a standalone and your new go-to as Easter approaches each year.
And I remember being somewhat skeptical when I heard about that book. And then once I did get a chance to read it, I thought, well, this is a very good approach. And, there are many different ways that one can assist someone in terms of preparing for Easter. But I did find it very much more meaningful than I anticipated. So I do recommend people consider getting that book, and as well as checking out the interview. And again, there will be a link in the show notes for that. Well, as you made a passing reference, and we have mentioned before, but let's go ahead and, for those who haven't heard the other interviews, have you share some in terms of the fact that you oversee the official C.S. Lewis group on Facebook and the blog that is part of the official C.S. Lewis website?
So both of those arrived on the scene around the first Narnia film, and thankfully and humbly, I've been involved with HarperCollins on the C.S. Lewis blog since its origination about, I want to say, 12 years ago or something. Maybe I'm adding a few years, I forget. And that has provided insight, not only my own, but also of others. I know, William, you did a series every month that brought us into light on various happenings of Lewis's life as the months coincided with those occurrences and publications and such. So there's been a number of people that have been involved in the blog and continue to be involved in the blog. I know Andrew Lazio's got some things he's doing with the Smithsonian of late, and he and I are in discussions of including some of that material on the blog. And then the Facebook page is a bit of a rowdy bunch of folks, only because of its number. It dwarfs in respects to the official C.S. Lewis HarperCollins page, but as a group, it's rather large. I think it's up to about 15,000 members of people quoting Lewis, adding photos and pictures and other sorts of art that is good and bad and okay. And, you can have your own opinion. But the good of it is that people are corresponding with one another on Lewis's stuff, and I have a lighter hand in its involvement as I provide various insights and various photos that I have found of Lewis, and quotes certainly as well. But hopefully from my point of view, the things that I put in are sort of the top tier. And William, I know you put in some things about, wait, you misquoted Lewis there. And we correct folks on that. And the good of that as well is people have, many of the contributors there in the Facebook group have policed themselves and have provided context, saying this is from such and such and chapter, and have begun to note that, okay, well, I've got to reference that. I can't just pull that from some quote machine and introduce it to the Lewis page, although that does still happen on occasion. So it's not at all a perfect place, but we hope people find it helpful. And if not, they can always adjust their settings and not be as involved.
Exactly. Yes, it is good to see that people are starting to add, they share a picture that just has the quote and say it's from C.S. Lewis. And when it is, it's definitely him. They go ahead, many will take that extra step to either ask me at times they have, and as well as just find it themselves and then reference that it's from a particular book or essay, so people can enjoy it even more so by reading it from the original work. Well, I've enjoyed talking with you, Zach. Let's go ahead and wrap up with the final question, and that is getting back to the two books that we got started with that come out here in 2018. Give the listener some final thoughts about those titles, which again were How to Be a Christian and the other, How to Pray.
Well, I hope they're helpful for folks, for one, and just adds to the library of Lewis's material that you might have on your shelf. And certainly, as you look at ways and to introduce people to Lewis, both of these selections are keen on that for sure. And if you're a Lewis person and your friend isn't, and you're meeting for coffee, consider maybe providing one of these as a way to not only introduce them to Lewis, but introduce them to the love of Jesus, which is really the point of all this. I guess I'll end with a selection from it's four lines of one of his poems. Pitcher demands heaven high and they'll be met. Ask for the morning star and take thrown in your earthly love. Why, yes, but how to set one's foot on the first rung, how to begin. And I think that the How to Pray book and certainly the How to Be a Christian book are ways to begin.
Ah, great. Well, that's a great way to end things. Zach, thank you again for being on All About Jack.
Thank you so much for having me, and I hope I'll be back soon with other Lewis stuff.
I look forward to that.
Thanks.
Again, you've been listening to All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm William O'Flaherty. You can get those show notes at EssentialCSLewis.com and look for this episode. But it might be easier to locate those notes where the audio files are hosted at allaboutjack.podbean.com. Again, that's allaboutjack.podbean.com. Podbean is spelled P-O-D-B-E-A-N. At either location, you can find various podcast shows that are typically interviews with authors of books about Lewis. I've also done an occasional series about a specific Lewis essay and a special series on Why Read Lewis, among other special topics. There are a variety of ways to listen to All About Jack. One is via iTunes. If you don't know how to do that, then check the show notes for a direct link, plus consider rating my podcast there. Before ending, let me also remind you about two books I've written. The most recent is The Misquotable C.S. Lewis. It explores 75 quotations I've researched that may or may not be from him and explains why you should be careful to confirm a quote credited to him until you know he really said it. It also reveals the closest things Lewis said related to the questionable saying I examined when it wasn't by him. I've also written an enhanced study guide to the Screwtape Letters. It's called C.S. Lewis Goes to Hell. You can learn more about that book by visiting ScrewtapeCompanion.com. There you can get an immediate download of a free 20-page PDF sample of that book. Again, that's ScrewtapeCompanion.com. Purchasing either of my books is a great way to indirectly support this podcast and make sure it remains freely available. Another way to help is by following a special link in my show notes when purchasing something from Amazon.com. Finally, thank you again for listening to All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm William O'Flaherty.